From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made last night in El Paso, Texas, where President Trump was leading a rally. He took a moment to mock the so-called Green New Deal, a proposal from some of the Democrats in Congress focusing on energy, climate change, and justice. Trump said that Democrats were proposing to take away cars, airplanes, and cows. The crowd laughed and then booed, and there is no doubt that the president is going to use this line again and again as a way of building opposition to the Green New Deal. But Democrats are not specifically proposing to take away your cars, your cows, or your airplanes. Writing for the Atlantic Monthly, Robinson Meyer describes the Green New Deal as a blueprint that commits our federal government to a 10-year national mobilization, echoing the national mobilization during World War II. Robinson writes, quote, "A Green New Deal would direct new solar farms to bloom in the desert, new high-speed rail lines to crisscross the plains, and squadrons of construction workers to insulate and weatherize buildings from Florida to Alaska. It would guarantee every American a job that pays a family-sustaining wage. It would codify paid family leave and strengthen union law nationwide. The resolution's ambition stretched beyond purely economic concerns, too, with a promise to honor all prior treaties with indigenous nations and to require their free, prior, and informed consent for decisions affecting their territory." End quote. David Roberts of Vox Online writes that the Green New Deal is meant both to decarbonize the economy and to make it fairer and more just. Some of the Democratic presidential contenders have already signaled their support for the Green New Deal. They include Senators Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Amy Klobuchar, Kirsten Gillibrand, and Cory Booker. This hour, the first in what will no doubt be a series of conversations about this emerging plan, what it is not, and more. And our guests include Dan Maloney, who's president of the Rochester and Genesee Valley Area Labor Federation, president of the Rochester Labor Council, and president of UAW Local 1097. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
And also with us on the line is Garrett Blad, who is the coordinator for the Sunrise Movement's national press team. Garrett, welcome. Where are you joining us from?
Thanks for having me. I'm joining you from South Bend, Indiana.
South Bend, Indiana, the home of Pete Buttigieg.
Home of Mayor Pete.
Mayor Pete, who's another person we may hear more about. And Garrett, by the way, the Sunrise Movement is something that our listeners either say, I have no idea what that is, or they're going to remember that I think it was the Sunrise Movement that helped lead the sit-in at Speaker Pelosi's office early in the session as a way of trying to build some support for the eventual Green New Deal. Is that correct?
That is correct. You'll remember us from maybe some manila envelopes that say back the deal and some yellow imagery. We are a group of young people from around the country who are fighting to put climate change at the top of the agenda and are working this year to back the Green New Deal and make it the common sense policy for anyone looking to govern our country.
All right. So listeners, as I said at the outset here, you know, we're going to have a lot of different conversations about this series of proposals because it's going to take a long time before anything can pass. I mean, Democrats know they don't have control in the Senate. Even if they did, they'd have to figure out what to do about needing potentially 60 votes instead of 51 that may be in the back of your mind. So there's a long way to go before a Green New Deal would get passed. But this does give us the framework to talk about goals, to talk about why the ambitions are set the way they are, and to talk about what's looped in and what's included. And if you've got questions, you can email or call the program this hour. We'll take your feedback early on here. I want to start with Dan Maloney, who's president of the Rochester and Genesee Valley Area Labor Federation, among the other hats that you wear. Right. And when it comes to these proposals, again, we don't have a ton of specifics. Do you have enough to know that you're optimistic about this? How are you feeling about what you've seen?
Exactly. We've been pushing from the auto worker standpoint for over a decade to get some hydrogen fuel cell cars, to land those manufacturing jobs here in Rochester due to the fact that it was our workers and our engineers that refined that technology for General Motors right here in the city. So we've had this push for over a decade, and then Assemblyman Joe Morelli, now Congressman Joe Morelli, is fully backing this. He had wrote a pre-legislative draft, a white paper, to hopefully get this done. And again, it's been a long time coming. But now from his position in Congress, I'm sure he can help with this new wave coming from the federal government, the new Green Deal. Certainly we're interested in that, but how it affects us locally is even of more importance to us, right? The workers that we represent in the Rochester area. Again, we've seen too many swing and a miss, right, at Kodak with digital film. We should own the world on that. Instead, they licensed it out, went bankrupt. We've seen a lot of bad moves for the economy. And with hydrogen fuel cells, we believe we can fix both the environment and the economy with green jobs. We need the governor's attention. We need him to be fully vested in this. And again, we see the green wave coming. We want to ride it to success.
All right, there's going to be a lot more to talk about with Dan as we go throughout the hour. Garrett, if I could, what I'm going to do is go ahead and just read some of the key goals in the Green New Deal. And then I kind of want to work through with our guests what they mean and what they might entail, if you don't mind here. So let's go ahead and let me just go ahead and read some of them. The key goals in the Green New Deal include cutting greenhouse gas emissions to net zero over 10 years, guaranteeing family-sustaining jobs for all Americans, and 100% zero-emission passenger vehicles by the year 2030, and 100% fossil-free transportation in this country by the year 2050. There's a lot more in the way of ideas, outlines, vision for each of those points. But Garrett, let's start with what we're seeing there. The criticism is that this is too ambitious, and it's not that it's too ambitious, it's that it's entirely unrealistic and a non-starter. Let's start with that criticism that I know you've heard. Go ahead.
Yeah, that might be exactly why we are bringing this forward. We are at a point right now in our country and on our planet where we have a decision to make. We can invest in the green energy sector. We can invest in a different type of economy that can help us to stop climate change and create millions of good jobs in the process. Or we can watch our land, our air, our water around us become not only just a nuisance, but a threat to our very lives in the next 10, 15 years. And we can see trillions of dollars lost from our economy. So what this plan does is, yes, it sets the goal high because we know that lives are at stake in addressing and stopping the climate crisis. So it sets the bar high. It says, we know that this is where we need to go to. What would it look like to set that as the goal and to unleash American ingenuity and innovation to try to meet that goal? We know that when JFK said that we were going to be on the moon by the end of the century, everyone thought that was a crazy idea, and that it only took 9 years for this country to get there. And look at what came of that. We discovered GPS and other technologies that are now essential to modern day life. So a lot of the technology that we don't even know of yet that will help us to get to this goal, a lot of that is in people's garages around the country and in labs and in universities and in government run facilities. So we believe that this is a necessary goal. This is an exciting goal and a goal that we must push for with all of our energy.
Here's some of the criticism from, this actually comes from a progressive writer for the New Republic, Jonathan Chait. And here's some of what he said about the plan's specifics in some ways and lack of specifics in other. Here's Chait. He writes, quote, "The plan contains too little prescription in areas where it's needed, avoiding any mention of the need to expand nuclear power, increase population density in cities, and cap pollution. At the same time, the plan contains far too much prescription in areas where none is needed, using the Green New Deal as a platform to add in unrelated proposals for free college, a job guarantee for all Americans, and other ideas that motivate progressives," end quote. And Ross Douthat, writing in the New York Times, says that by adding in the guarantee of a job, the notion of free college, and other progressive ideas not perhaps, in his words, directly related to climate, it looks like a Trojan horse for remaking the economy in general. And I would like both of you to kind of weigh in on that. Garrett, again, I know you've heard this criticism. Why does the Green New Deal include these kind of prongs about a job guarantee, about paid leave, about free college, et cetera?
Well, it's very clear. If we look at the economy right now, we know that the average American, the working class people of this country, are not getting by. We know people are working two to three jobs. My mom has, I think, four jobs at this moment. She's a third grade teacher here in Indiana. We know what it's like to work in an economy that's not working for us. So this job, this project, the Green New Deal, is not just about stopping the climate crisis. It's seeing it as an opportunity, probably of our lifetime, to remake an economy that's been leaning more and more towards the billionaire class and less towards the working people of this country. It's our opportunity to remake that relationship and create a new deal with, that is in, you know, the essence of the name, a new deal with our government to say that this government moving forward is going to fight for the working class people of this country and not for the richest of the rich, so that everyone can have a share in the new prosperity that this deal could bring. We're really seeing millions of jobs being created in a way that we haven't seen in many years in this country. And that could really transform everything about our lives. And we want to make sure that that is available to everyone, not just those who can afford it.
So Dan Maloney, as someone who represents labor on a number of fronts, let's hit a couple of points on the economy. Number one, are you in favor of a plan, and including the language, that all Americans should be guaranteed a family-sustaining job?
Yes, amen. And I sit on the RMAPI board, Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative, and they claim that we are number one in the nation for childhood and family poverty for any similar-sized city. And I guess just rank us with all U.S. cities, we're number two overall in those categories. So, yeah, we have to do this right. We have to build, again, fix the environment while fixing the economy, and this is the right way to do it. Put in those labor standards. Hopefully, you know, we've been under attack for a lot of years in labor. And when that happens, two-thirds of GDP is consumer spending. The consumer has less money to spend. The economy goes in the tank. So it's time to reverse that with good-paying jobs, green energy jobs.
And you also indicated that this matters to you because of your hope to see some of the work being done, at least in the, either the innovation or manufacturing auto sector here in our area. What leads you to believe that that could happen?
Well, the guest sitting next to me just gave me an article dated February 9th from The Beacon, and it says that America's largest source of greenhouse gas emissions is transportation. So my brothers and sisters at the United Auto Workers Union here, we aspire to build those. We did refine the technology here, so we have the solution to fix the economy and the environment, and we intend to do both.
Well, let's welcome in Heather DeLeese. Hi, Heather. Heather is Greater Rochester Parent Leader and Team Coordinator for Irondequoit Mothers Out Front. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And get right on that microphone for us here. You just came in out of the cold. It's nice to have you here in the studio. Thank you.
Yes, the roads are pretty treacherous out there, speaking of transportation.
So what we've been talking about with Dan, we've got Garrett Blatt on the line with us from the Sunrise Movement, and we're talking about the sort of the first take on the Green New Deal, which we know, if it passes at all in this country, it's going to require a Senate, probably in the Democratic column. It's going to require a Democrat in the White House to pass it, and that may be, at minimum, what is required. So it'd be a long road to even get there. But this is a good chance to talk about what's realistic, what is the kind of framework that we need in place here. And we had already talked a little bit about, Heather, and I'd like to get your take on whether the plan either overreaches in terms of its ambitions. And I had quoted Jonathan Chait from The New Republic. Let me go ahead and read a little bit more from him, and I'll get your take on this, just in terms of what we think is realistic. He writes, "Very few environmental experts consider the targets laid out in this plan to be remotely attainable. Climate change experts have called for zeroing out emissions in the power sector by 2050, while the Green New Deal proposes doing so by 2030. On what basis does it maintain the time frame can be accelerated by two-thirds? It does not say. If my plan for retirement is to have $1 million in the bank when I'm 70, and then I decide the new plan is to have $1 million when I'm 50, is that progress? Or just empty sloganeering," end quote. That's from John Chait. And then a lot of people are pointing to the NPR conversation with Ernest Moniz, who was the Secretary of Energy under President Barack Obama and also a nuclear physicist. Here's what he had to say. He says, quote, "I'm afraid I just cannot see how we could possibly go to zero carbon in the 10-year time frame. It's just impractical. And if we start putting out impractical targets, we may lose a lot of key constituencies who we need to bring along to have a real low-carbon solution on the most rapid time frame that we can achieve. We could lose, for example, labor unions," end quote. I know Dan will have something to say about that in a second. But those are two voices that aren't President Trump mocking this thing. They aren't right-leaning voices, but they're saying even this plan It's too much. It's not realistic. It's not going to meet these targets, and then we're going to lose people. What do you say?
Well, I say it's a starting point, and it's a resolution. It's not legislation yet. And what it's done is gotten people like us to sit around the table and start talking about it. It's also gotten our political leaders finally bringing it up front and center at the table and talking about it in a new way that we haven't talked about it before, which is extremely important. So framing it the way it is and getting people riled up about it is possibly the best way that we can get to the solutions that we need to make it realistic. Maybe it doesn't happen in 10 years, but we're not going to hold anybody to the fire to that. Obviously, political leaders know that they can't make empty promises. Some do, but most won't. And what they'll do is consult experts and have a set of legislation that they know that they'll be able to meet. For example, Cuomo just announced yesterday, along with Brooklyn Senator Sanders, that they're going to try to make this goal for New York done by 2040 for 100% clean. So it's possible. We can do it. We need to start somewhere. And shooting for the stars is the only way to get to the moon. Right. So one day we didn't even think that was going to be possible. So I am excited about this talk. I'm excited that we're all thinking this way. And it's giving people like our grassroots and our moms who are concerned about human life for our children to have a healthy, sustainable environment, to have a healthy social environment and economic environment.
Dan, when it comes to that last part of the quote from former Energy Secretary Moniz, he says, if we aim too high and we fail, if we set these ambitious goals, super ambitious goals that are not realistic, we're going to start losing key constituencies. And he puts labor unions as an example. Do you think you could lose labor here?
I don't think so. You look at the example of General Motors right now, and they announced they're closing 5 plants in North America. Everything's moving to China and Mexico. So if we can build in some labor standards to this new Green Deal, even if we only got 20% of the jobs that were projected, that's going forward, and we're all in on that, right?
I want to turn to Garrett Blad. And Garrett, my mind goes to the recent piece I read in The New Yorker about Mayor Pete Buttigieg. And if you don't mind, I just kind of want to hearken to some of the themes that Mayor Buttigieg brought up. Listeners, if you're hearing that name for the first time, this could be a very significant actual Democratic presidential contender in the next year. He's 37 years old. He's the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. He has helped preside over a turnaround in South Bend that used to be listed on the basically dying American cities list. He's a very interesting guy. And The New Yorker has a piece on Pete Buttigieg in which he raised an interesting question. And that was about generational justice, intergenerational justice, and generational divides. And this is where my mind goes, Garrett, because what I hear is a lot of, frankly, older Americans looking at this plan saying, you know, kids these days, you think you can do this, you think you can do that, you cannot, that's unrealistic, it's not possible. Pete Buttigieg said that there's a real sense among his generation and younger that they've got to undo some of the lack of planning and lack of foresight in previous adult generations, which is a hard theme for parents and grandparents to hear. But Buttigieg says he's going to try to make that a positive case for that, but being blunt, that you didn't plan for climate. You didn't plan for the economy very well. You started wars that seemed like a good idea, and we're paying for it in different ways. That's a hard message, but he's saying realistically, we have to be ambitious to fix what has been broken and put into our hands. Now, I don't want to speak for him, Garrett, but that's kind of how I read that. How do you take that?
Absolutely. And I think that's part of why young people like Mayor Pete are so exciting. I know Mayor Pete is one of the reasons why I moved back to South Bend, because I think the millennial generation sees the climate crisis, the job crisis, as different than the other generations. We have a particular sense of anger at the established government class and the elite of this country who made decisions for the length of our entire lives that got us here. You know, the United Nations have been meeting to talk about climate change for longer than I've been alive. And we have seen only an increase in greenhouse gas emissions since 1992 when I was born. So our generation really has nothing more left to lose. We're the first generation in this country to foreseeably earn less than our parents. We are looking at a planet that is on the verge of death and an economy that can collapse at a moment's notice. And we are, you know, shackled with college debt and bills and no guarantee of health care in this country. So what we see in this crisis in front of us is also a generational opportunity to actually stop the climate crisis, create millions of good jobs, and transform our economy so that the young people in this country can become a productive part of this country and not fear of losing our jobs, of losing, you know, everything we love and the people and places we love in this country. And so I think he is tapping into a particular sense of anxiety and anger in this country. And I think that's why Sunrise Movement is building an army of young people across this country, because it's not hard to get people frustrated about this crisis. We see it, we feel it, and we are going to come out in the thousands, if not the millions, in the next 2 years to make this deal a reality.
By the way, Garrett, South Bend can't be that big of a city. Go tell Mayor Pete he should come on this show sometime soon. Put in a good word for us. That would be a fun conversation. Listeners, we want to hear from you as we talk about the Green New Deal this hour. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. If the Green New Deal were to be successful, we could see 100% zero-emission passenger vehicles by 2030. And that means realistically, maybe the next car you buy, you need to be thinking about what might power it within the next decade or so. And that's an interesting question. Heather, I don't know what your transportation situation is, but if you're buying a new vehicle, are you already thinking, I don't know if there's going to be gas stations here by the time this vehicle is limping home to the finish line?
Yes, absolutely.
You are?
Yes, because I have a Honda, and it's 2002. And it's,
get that mic, grab it right in close.
My Honda 2002.
2002?
It's a CRV. It's pretty old.
How many miles on it?
I'm over 100.
I would think well over 100.
Yeah, especially because I used to travel downstate and up back again. It's got its mileage on it. And unfortunately, electric cars for this kind of weather don't really exist. They're not readily available and they're not affordable.
You're going to start a fight with the electric vehicle crowd. They're going to call me in a second. They're going to push back on that. But go ahead.
But that's coming from my perspective.
Yeah.
What I can afford, I can't afford an electric vehicle right now. So I am just stringing my car along as far as possible so that reality can actually settle in. Because the more the demand goes up, the prices will go down. It's supply and demand. So if we actually have legislation that comes through that says, okay, no more fossil fuel cars, there then has to be a program to help people buy into electrical vehicles. Not only that, now we're going to need electrical stations. There'll be a demand for that, and that puts local jobs into our hands.
Yeah, and what Heather's bringing up there, people might be wondering, well, is that in the Green New Deal? I think, Garrett Bladd, part of the point is the Green New Deal is established as a framework of goals, but it doesn't have all the specifics filled in. And the creators of the Green New Deal have said this isn't the final document that has every specific detail. In other words, Heather's point, if she's saying, look, if you don't think you can afford an electric vehicle, but that's where we're going, there is space and time to figure out a way to make sure people can achieve and afford that. Is that going to happen, Garrett?
Totally. Like you said, this resolution that's in the House and the Senate right now is just that. It's a resolution. It's a marker for what we expect our government to follow in these next 2 years. And we're going to be working with a lot of people on this. I know Sunrise Movement is just one of many organizations that have been collaborating with Representative Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Markey. And if I just encourage anyone who's concerned or excited about this to get involved, this is only going to be a realistic and justice-oriented plan if everyone who has a say, who has a stake in it, is at the table. So if you're really excited about this, get involved with Sunrise Movement, get involved with other local organizations or unions in your area to start having conversations. That's what it's going to take to make sure that this is the best plan it can be.
Okay. Well, and let's do this since we're late for a break. Let's get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back to your phone calls because we've got plenty of feedback already lined up as we talk about the Green New Deal. You're hearing Garrett Blatt on the line with us from South Bend, Indiana. He's with the Sunrise Movement that has been helping not only kind of lead the way on some of these issues, but also try to put a little heat. Boy, that's a bad pun this hour. But put a little heat on political, on lawmakers in various quarters. And they are really tied to these efforts to see real change. So we're talking about the Green New Deal. Garrett Blatt on the line. Heather DeLeese is a Greater Rochester parent leader and team coordinator for Irondequoit Mothers Out Front. Dan Maloney is president of the Rochester and Genesee Valley Area Labor Federation, president of the Rochester Labor Council, and president of UAW Local 1097. Your phone calls after the only break of the hour. Coming up in our second hour, it's Oscar season. It wouldn't be Oscar season if there weren't some controversies to talk about. We'll talk about what was and was not nominated, what categories you won't get to see on live television, and your thoughts on some of the so-called snubs and the controversial issues surrounding the Oscars. Our panel debates it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's go down to Pennsylvania. That's where Neely Kelly is, also with Mothers Out Front. Are you in Pennsylvania? Neely, are you there? Now I've lost her. Maybe she's in the, like... Well, let's do this, Neely. If you can call me back, call us back, and I hope you're okay in Pennsylvania. Biggest storm on the east. Next on the phone, Andrew in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hey, you know, Heather kind of stumbled onto one of the big problems here, and I'm not for this green business that you guys are talking about. It's full of socialism and all kinds of goofiness, but it's too expensive. People can't just in 10 years be no gas cars. That's you guys are way out of whack on how, you know, what's going to happen in what, in 10, 11, 12 years from now. None of that's going to happen. And you're just going to get Republicans elected the way you guys are talking, just in case you, and that's fine with me. But that's what's going to happen. Even Nancy Pelosi is not on board with all of this stuff. So that's all I got to say. And Heather brought up capitalism principles when she talked about supply and demand. So, I mean, and now you're going to tell us, oh, well, capitalism is immoral somehow or something like that. So you guys better figure out something simpler that you can actually do that will help people instead of all this craziness. That's all I got to say. See you later.
Andrew, thank you for the phone call. To Andrew's point, Pat Buchanan just wrote a piece today saying that the Green New Deal is the best gift to Republicans in 2020 because they will run on opposing it and they will win easily because of that. So Andrew has got some points. I'll start with Garrett Blatt from the Sunrise Movement. Republicans and people who support them like Andrew are licking their chops here. They like this. They think this helps them with voters. What do you say to that, Garrett?
It kind of makes me laugh. And every time I see Trump talking about it, it's a sign that we're winning. I think when we see our enemies attacking the projects that we're putting forward and the exciting policy ideas that are right now inside the Democratic Party, I think it's a sign of success. I think we've already seen that this policy is very popular on both sides of the aisle. 92% of Democrats support something like a Green New Deal. Over 62% of Republicans also support it. They are scared. They're lashing out with these various attacks about socialism and other big, scary ideas that they're trying to get people concerned about. When the reality is, they're scared that this is going to be a generational change in this country. And if it is the Democratic Party that backs and passes something like the Green New Deal, we can imagine that party being very popular for the next many, many years. So I think what we're seeing now in these political lashouts against the Green New Deal is just fear about a really popular program that's going to be exciting for a lot of people, especially young people, who if young people come out in droves in the next election, will transform politics in America, the likes of which we haven't seen in a generation. So I think people are scared about what this could present to the Republican Party, and we are excited to work with Republicans and Democrats to make sure that this this project can be as best it can be and benefit the American people.
Well, Yale and George Mason have been polling since 2008 on the question of whether Americans are somewhat worried, very worried, not worried at all about climate change. 2 months ago, their newest poll was done. It's the highest level since their survey began. Nearly 70% of Americans now say they are worried or very worried about climate change. And that number is 7 percentage points higher in just less than 1 year's time. So it's the highest number. Clearly, Americans are concerned about climate change. It's Americans like Andrew who are hearing Heather going, hey, he thinks your idea is goofy. He thinks it will help the politicians he likes. And he thinks there's no money to pay for any of this. What do you say to Andrew there?
Well, I say, first of all, fighting climate change is not a partisan. It should be bipartisan. It should be everybody involved. And we need people like Andrew who think that it is goofy to speak up their minds and say, look, this sounds really scary. This is ridiculous. Because then we can start a conversation on, well, what are your suggestions? What don't you think is ridiculous? And that's how you meet in the middle. I don't see this as making one party go after the other. I would hope it doesn't end up that way. This is a democracy. This is about starting a conversation and having a debate. And we have a goal, and how are we going to get there?
Okay. Dan?
Garrett nailed it, right? The Climate Note article, December the 14th, 81% of Americans strongly or somewhat strongly support the Green New Deal, including 57% of conservative Republicans. So I believe... what Garrett said was very accurate. And the jobs creation in the infrastructure itself here, putting, you know, we're not going to be able to outsource this. When we build a new power grid, when we install those windmills and solar panels, that's putting Americans to work. And that's going to be a net positive for whatever party pushes for the Green New Deal. And that's why labor is all on board. We just want to make sure there's good labor standards built in when we're using our tax dollars. We want to get a benefit for the American worker.
All right, in the next 20 minutes, I don't know if I've ever seen so many phone lines lit up. Let's take as many as we can on the subject of the Green New Deal. Benjamin in Henrietta, next up. Go ahead, Benjamin.
All right, thanks for having me, Evan, and thank you, panel. I just have such a visceral, emotional reaction to Andrew's comment. For lack of better words, I have to identify as a millennial, and I feel like, as goofy as it sounds to the older generation, they seriously just need to give up, get out of the way, and support it. Because at the end of the day, while you're getting older, we're going to be the ones taking care of you. And it just feels like bad karma. And to sum it up, it does feel like a generational fight, and I'm fed up with it, and I just look forward to millennials kind of owning the world if it still exists for us.
Benjamin, thank you for the phone call. So a very strong reaction to Andrew's call. And Garrett, are you hearing sentiment like that, frustration? And in a minute, I mean, Heather talked about meeting people in the middle. I'll ask her if she thinks that's a sort of a negative sentiment, because, you know, there's a lot of frustration in that call. But what are you hearing, Garrett?
Yeah, I think we're seeing, again, the same type of generational frustration that talked about before when talking about Mayor Pete Buttigieg. We know that the decisions to get us where we are today were made by people, our parents and older generations. And it's our time right now to say no more to the fossil fuel CEOs and lobbyists buying out our politicians and ensuring that they send jobs overseas, that they back a dying industry, and prevent the exciting and necessary transition to renewable energy in this country. So I totally feel that frustration. That's what many in the Sunrise Movement are feeling, and why this movement is blowing up right now, because young people are frustrated. We want change, and we feel like we've been left out of the political system for too long, and we're saying no more. It's our time.
Okay. Heather, how do you feel about what you heard from Benjamin?
That inspires me, because in order to have a true representative democracy, we need everybody on board. And right now, our voting rate for younger voters, they don't really necessarily always show up at the polls. And I think they're going to. And now we get to hear them, and they get to have a voice. And because not all the older people know all the answers. because it's their future and their world too, that they should have a say, and we need to listen to them. And I guess I'm in the middle of all that. I'm more middle-aged. I can have that look, that respect for what knowledge our elderly have and what brightness that our youth can bring to us and how that can work together.
If you're on the phone, I hope nobody drops, because there's a lot of different calls that we want to take there here in a lot of different directions. You want to talk about infrastructure, how the work is going to, and there's a lot of different things we're going to get through. But staying on this theme here, let's get the boomer perspective from Earl in Irondequoit, who wants to respond to some of what we heard. Go ahead, Earl.
Hey, thank you. So I want to reply both to Benjamin and Andrew. And first of all, Benjamin, I'm of that generation. I actually, not at the same time, but I actually went to the same high school as Adlai Stevenson did, even though my parents were supporting Eisenhower. But that brings me into talking about our infrastructure. And the petroleum car-based infrastructure, the design of our transportation system, the design of our cities, has been totally subsidized by the government. You know, if you are old enough to remember when that interstate was being built, that was a subsidized program, right? And so it built up this infrastructure and this massive support among, you know, various industries. So I don't want to hear, Andrew, about socialism, because first of all, it's not socialism when the government does something with our tax dollars. Socialism is when the government owns an industry, right? So I have a background in biology and other sciences. I'm passionate about this. I'm part of the boomer generation, and I will fight like hell for my children and any grandchildren that I, you know, may have the pleasure of having to make sure that they can live.
Well, Earl, thank you. Earl in Irondequoit, so weighing in there from a boomer perspective, saying that he's sort of comments saying that we can't do this are not typical of his generation. And you know what? That's also a fair point. I mean, every generation has built towering achievements. And I think what we're hearing from some of the younger voices behind the sentiment behind the Green New Deal is you're going to see us do this. You know, your negativity is probably not going to take you very far, but we'll see here. So listeners, again, 844-295-TALK. We're trying to fill in as much as we can before the end of the hour. Let me get Neely Kelly again, who is back on the line with us from Pennsylvania. Hi, Neely.
Hi, Evan. Thanks so much for taking my call. I wanted to make a point about transportation and how we do have to transition our car fleet off of fossil fuel driven cars. But what we really, really, really need to be prioritizing and putting front and center is equitable transportation policy. I have a colleague in the Hampton Roads area, and public transportation is such a central and important aspect, not only of our current carbon emissions, a way of reducing our carbon emissions, but a way of ensuring that racial and social justice are front and center in this transition. And so I guess I'm curious to hear from Garrett. And Garrett, thank you so much for calling in and taking the time to call in today. What the Sunrise Movement folks are thinking about in terms of really ensuring public transportation access, infrastructure, investment are front and center for the Green New Deal. Thank you so much.
All right, Neely, thank you very much. Garrett, you want to add to some of that?
Yeah, totally. And I really appreciate your comments. We are totally on board with that. We see the justice and equity questions as central elements to this plan, because we know that those communities that have been on the front lines of fossil fuel infrastructure and extraction in this country, who are on the front lines of the hurricanes and fires and droughts and floods that are, you know, destroying people's lives and livelihoods, we know that those are the same people who are often poorer, they're often people of color, they're often marginalized in many different ways in this country, and those are the very people who must be first to receive the benefits of this transition. And that, for one example, it looks like ensuring that transitioning away from fossil fuels means that everyone hopefully has access to public transit. We make our cities center. We we create more sustainable and urban atmospheres around our country. There's a lot of details in there that are going to be worked out by people with more policy expertise than me, but that is definitely the sentiment that the Sunrise Movement is backing.
Heather, you weren't in the studio. We talked briefly earlier in the hour about some of the criticism, even coming from the center-left, voices like John Chater saying this overreaches, that when you look at economic justice and you take your eyes just off climate change, the Green New Deal goes too far. And you just heard Garrett defending that. You're shaking your head as well. Go ahead.
No, this is what's great about, you know, creating this umbrella, because what people don't understand is that climate injustice is connected to economics, and it is connected to social justice, and that brings in racial justice. People who are poor and are of color, they live in our urbanized cities, and that was done by a planning aspect. And we know this in Rochester, and it was called redlining, and it was done all over the country. And immigrants and people of color predominantly were pushed to move in cities. And not only that, that's where we built all of our industrial plants, and we have most of our brownfields. It's we have a lot of buses and public transportation with cars, and so there's more smog, and children are having higher rates of asthma, and these people have higher health risks. They don't have access to great health, which the Green New Deal even goes as far as reaching into how do we create a better health system. And that's because all these things, they're all connected. This is like when you want to send your child to a school, you're not going to just hopefully think that they're just going to learn math. You need to think about the whole child in order to fully grow and be a healthy, stable unit and person. So this is not overreaching. This is what we have to deal with. We can no longer stand for what's going on in our society, with our environment, for our future, and for our neighbors.
So, Dan, when it comes to the infrastructure changes, you talked a little bit about your perspective, and I know you do work for not only UAW, but for the entire council. Building Correct. And trades, what does labor look at the Green New Deal and see when it comes to infrastructure changes?
More specifically, what it means here in New York, right? The governor wants to see some offshore wind. He's getting big into that. And we believe as long as that's built with good union labor, again, putting people to work, helping to fix the economy as well as the environment, those folks will be able to create hydrogen on off-peak hours with wind, with solar. That hydrogen, we can have a fleet of buses, we can have trains. They do this in Europe. And the choice, and I've been telling folks this for a while, the choice is we're either going to import this technology in the next decade and continue economically to suffer, or we're going to build it, manufacture it here, export it, and prosper. So, yeah, we're all in on this. Again, the infrastructure, the piping, the storage of hydrogen is going to be big. We see it already in warehousing. There's hydrogen fork trucks, so you're not polluting that environment with propane or gasoline. And we look forward to the day where we get all in from the governor and get this done for New York.
Well, now we're getting a little love for Andrew in the emails. Nick in Fairport says, I totally don't agree with the caller, Andrew, but I do have a lot of respect for him calling in. And Ben on Twitter says, don't dismiss Andrew and his demographic. Engage with them. I love to hear how his disdain for socialism meshes with fossil fuel subsidies by the government. If he's all for capitalism, let's even the playing field and let renewables compete. I think that's some of what I heard from Heather DeLeese, which is that you've got to engage and meet people where they are. And Andrew, don't worry about Andrew. He'll call the program and mix it up with whoever. We always appreciate that. So thank you to Andrew and everyone who's been on the line. Let's continue with your phone calls. This is Jim in Penfield. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I may have misread what I heard, but I just would hate to have this newer generation that wants this Green Deal to discount everybody in my boomer generation, because we support what they're doing. We know what's going on. We've seen this transformation during the 70s when we were raising our kids and watching cable TV and didn't realize that the conservatives had organized themselves and taken over state governments, put people in that they wanted and so forth. We're angry that this happened under our watch. and we need your support. We've got a tax cut that's going to put $1 trillion in debt every year, which is about $3,000 for every man, woman, child in the country. And the Republicans are going to come back and say, we got to cut Social Security, we got to cut Medicare, and we need your support. They've been telling you that you're not going to have it. There's no reason why you can't have it. You know, it's that's what they want everyone thinking. And the other thing is, I don't like Hillary Clinton saying single payer is a non-starter. As much as I love Nancy Pelosi clapping at the State of the Union, she's not on my side. They all care about corporate profits, and there's some facts about single payer or our health care system. The fact that it's 50% higher than the rest of the world, and we're 10th on the list of positive outcomes, which means we're paying for things we don't need. There's tons of money in there. The governor of New York was out today saying that New York can't afford single payer. Well, you can't afford it the way it is. And when Obamacare started, they were testing, paying for results, not services. And that's part of the problem. Test to protect them from lawsuits. Test to make the hospital group money. There's just so much money laying there that any real businessman would be able to go in there and cut, and make it affordable for everyone.
All right, Jim, thank you. Garrett, you know, he's got some harsh words for Nancy Pelosi and some of the Democratic leadership. Is part of the goal of the Sunrise Movement to sort of shake loose and move to the left Nancy Pelosi and other leadership?
Yeah, I just want to make clear here. The vision that we are moving forward is not about left or right. It isn't about engaging in this political squabble
of Democrats
versus Republicans. What we really are seeing in our country and what the Sunrise Movement is trying to make clear is that this country right now is being governed and ruled by an elite billionaire class that is connected and often in bed with the fossil fuel CEOs, lobbyists, and front groups who have held back progress on this issue for the past four decades, and that we are going to work with everyone, left, right, center, to make sure that we can stop climate change and create the millions of good jobs that we can in this country. And that's where we're keeping our focus. We, of course, are excited to keep working with Speaker Pelosi and to have her support for the Green New Deal, as well as every member of Congress on both sides of the aisle.
I mean, I'm swamped with phone calls. I mean, this is amazing. Let's just try to take a couple more quick ones real tight here. Rich in Rochester, keep it tight.
Hey, how you doing,
Eric? Good. Yep.
Again, first of all, I don't like to be called elderly.
No one called you elderly.
No, she said, well, the elderly people. And that's just a joke. But really quick, in touching on some of this stuff, I like the social justice piece. But I think also, in looking at this, I think the younger people in my people in our age, we have to open our minds as far as new technologies, things like there's much better nuclear energies where the recycling of fuel and everything is like magnitudes better than what it used to be. And just to look at nuclear energy like it's 1967, I think we're doing ourselves a disservice. There's so many different other options besides. Yes, we have windmills. Yes, we have solar. But to say that we are not going to look at something like nuclear because of what happened in 1977, not taking into account it's 50 years later and there's hundreds of different ideas that are much better, I think is short-sighted.
All right, Rich, thank you very much. And against my better judgment, I'm going to take Chris in Rochester. Got to do it in about 20 seconds or less. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm sure this point has already been made, but for those who want to criticize social programs, maybe they should be the first to give us their Social Security and Medicare going forward if we think it's such a dumb idea.
Okay, Chris, thank you very much. We've kind of heard variations at that point. We're down to our last 90 seconds or so, and just the first conversation on the Green New Deal yielded more phone calls than I've seen in months and emails that I could probably read all day. So listeners, if you didn't get through, we'll have a lot more to say on this. Dan Maloney, 20 seconds. Going forward, you want to see what from the Green New Deal? What do you want to see now? Specifics?
Yes, we do. We want to get legislation here in New York and have it convert to green energy jobs and help end poverty and get Heather in a General Motors car and out of that Honda.
And it sounds to me like what you're saying is on the state level, you're not waiting for the federal government because you know it could take some time.
And we hope our friend in Congress, Joe Morelli, can help with that, maybe some federal funding for our state.
What do you want to see next, Heather?
I would like to see our federal government back the support of a Green New Deal resolution. And I would like to see our state and Governor Cuomo follow through with the Green New Deal for New York on all the same points that we talked on.
Okay. And Garrett Blad from the Sunrise Movement, what do you want to see happen next?
Yes, again, we want to have every member of Congress support the resolution that's in the House and the Senate right now, and every presidential candidate make this a top priority in their campaign moving forward.
Garrett, if people want to check out the Sunrise Movement, where can they find you?
You can find us on social media. Our website is sunrisemovement.org. We're very active wherever you can find us online.
Hey, Garrett, thanks for getting us that interview with Mayor Pete that I look forward to. I appreciate that.
I'll see what I can do.
Garrett Blad is a coordinator, national media and press coordinator for the Sunrise Movement, joining us from South Bend, Indiana. Dan Maloney, president of the Rochester and Genesee Valley Area Labor Federation, the ROC Labor Council, and the UAW Local 1097. Nice to see you again. Thanks for
Thank
being
you.
Here. And Heather DeLise, Greater Rochester Parent Leader, Mothers Out Front Online, where can people get
Mothers Out Front.org, and we will have new information about the Green New Deal and how you can get involved coming very soon.
All right, I promise we got a lot more to say about these and related subjects. I know you do too on future programs. More connections coming up.